2 Kings chapter 5, it's a wonderful story. I'm not going to read it all of chapter 5, but I'd encourage you, you go home today or this week, just read 2 Kings chapter 5. It's a wonderful story. But just a few verses from chapter 5 I want to read. It says, "Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him, the Lord," that's Yahweh, that's Jehovah, "the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, a great warrior, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. And Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. By all means, go, the king of Aram replied. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing." Church, we are considering what it means to be under construction. In here, no matter who you are, where you're at in life, you and I, we are all works in progress. We are under construction. I believe that God is doing something in each and every one of us. We are under construction. And I hope that we can accept that God is working on our lives, and he isn't through with us yet. And as long as we live, there will always be construction projects in our lives. It's like the constant and nonstop construction that takes place in central Ohio. Orange barrels and construction vehicles and detour signs and alternate routes, slow and single lane traffic patterns. It's all part of being under construction. And it can be a frustrating experience, but it's necessary. If we want good roads and safe roads, construction is necessary. Now, if we want to be better people, we want to be better men and better women and better children, better husbands, better wives, better siblings, better parents, better spouses, if we want to be have a better life, we want to have an enriched life, we will have to submit our lives to God's construction. Last week, we looked at detours. We considered the life of Saul, who is Paul the Apostle. But he didn't always go by Paul the Apostle. Before becoming an apostle and a preacher of the gospel, before he became a missionary and traveled all over the known world sharing this gospel message, before that was his vocation, before he became a writer, he was a terrorist. He because of his religious convictions, he threw people into prison, and that led to many people's execution. But he received the grace of God. God changed his direction. He was baptized into Christ, and his journey would forever be changed. And in his own words, he would always be under construction. Philippians chapter 3 and verse number 12. I'm not saying that I have it all together, that I haven't made it, but I am well on my way, reaching out for Christ, who has so wonderfully reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all this, but I got my eye on the goal, where God is beckoning us onward to Jesus. I'm off and running, and I'm not turning back. That's from the Message, Philippians chapter 3, verses 12 through 14. This morning, I want us to look briefly at a man by the name of Naaman. And I want us to consider rough roads, rough pavement. I know a little something about rough roads and rough pavement. I grew up in Buffalo. Where I grew up, there are always rough roads. I would assume that's because in Buffalo, it just seems to be always cold weather. And then during the winter time, when it snows, we have snow plow vehicles that are running all the time, and they're tearing up the roads trying to move away snow. And sometimes when you're using these heavy machines and you're pushing away snow, sometimes you pull up the pavement, and man, potholes in Buffalo are the norm, not the exception. I remember years ago, driving, I had a little gray Hyundai Sonata, and I was driving and had some friends in the car, and we were driving, and as you're trying to like dodge a pothole, you ever been on a road so bad where you dodge a pothole only to hit another pothole? Well, that's exactly what happened to me, and I hit a pothole, and my front, I believe it was a passenger side, man, just blew the tire. It was below zero weather. I had to get out and change the tire in below. I didn't have AAA, and you know, I knew how to change it, and it was cold, and I didn't have gloves on. And I changed it. I was a trooper. I found out later on I got frostbite. And I still to this day kind of suffer from the effects of getting frostbite. And you ask my wife, you know, when it gets cold outside, I mean, my hands, they start to hurt. My hands are so bad from being frostbitten. Now, all that brought upon by rough roads, Buffalo and potholes. When rough roads are in bad shape, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to determine that they need to get fixed. They need to be repaired. And I'm not talking about, you know, throwing a little filler in it and letting cars drive over it and it fill in. That lasts for a while, but that didn't last too long. Bad roads need to be fixed. And if you know anything about fixing a bad road, you know that before it gets better, it's going to get rough. Does that make sense, church? Do you know what I'm saying? You ever see a road that's going under construction? It gets a lot worse before it gets better. Naaman was a powerful guy. He was a special guy. He was an important guy. As the commander of the army of Aram, Aram is present-day central Syria. As the commander of the army of Aram, he was the number two guy in the country, only behind the king of Aram. Naaman was a successful commander, leading triumph after triumph in military campaigns all over the region. And the text says that it was the Lord, Jehovah, that gave these victories to Aram and Naaman as the commander of the army. He was a mighty warrior, a valiant soldier, the text says. But he had leprosy. You know, that's the story of a lot of people. You know, you list their resume and it's all good, and we are even conditioned to hear, but he is such a kind man, but oh, she is so beautiful, but that church is so friendly. But he is such a gifted man. But she is such an inspiration. But the narrator of this text, I think, paints a pretty powerful picture. Naaman was such a great man, but he had leprosy. That description might not mean all that to us in the 21st century in America. We don't deal with leprosy like some remote places in the world. In South America, there are some places where leprosy is really bad. We don't really have a huge issue with leprosy here in America. So maybe better descriptions might get you to see what the narrator, what the author of this text is trying to communicate to us. He might have said something like, Naaman was a great man, but he had AIDS. Naaman was a great man, but he was addicted to heroin. Naaman was a great man, but he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Does that start to make sense here in the 21st century? Naaman was a great man, but he had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. Naaman, that's not getting you. Naaman was a great man, but he was a Michigan fan. Does that make sense? Does that get you in the 21st century? Sorry, baby. The narrator of 2 Kings wants us to see that Naaman was rough. And something needed to be done to repair this rough man. There is value in this man. Obviously, the Lord sees something in this man in spite of his roughness. And so this rough man would be a prime candidate for God's work. And the Lord uses a servant girl, a Jewish girl who was captured by Naaman's army in one of his conquests. And she became a servant to Naaman and his wife. She sees the leprosy and says, if Naaman could get in front of the prophet from Samaria, that is the prophet of Israel, he would be cured. And the prophet she spoke of was Elisha. Naaman, longing to be cured, rushed to his king, the king of Aram, and told him about this prophet. Naaman goes to this king and says, "Listen, the servant girl in our home, she said if I can get in front of this prophet of Israel, I can be cured from this despicable, disgusting disease. Man, I'm too important to have this. And if this keeps up, they're gonna put me away. I'm gonna have to be away from my family and my friends, and I won't be able to lead these conquests." The king, knowing that Naaman was so important, the king says, "You know what? All right, I'm gonna send a letter to the king of Israel. I'm gonna send a bunch of money. I'm gonna send you, and I'm gonna ask him to cure you." The letter gets to the king of Israel. You can read this in chapter 5. The letter gets to the king of Israel. He reads it and he sees Naaman there with leprosy, and the king is like, "Well, I don't know how to heal people. Who does he think I am?" And the king thinks to himself, "Oh no, they're setting me up." The king of Israel thought that he sent Naaman there and that he gave the king a request that he couldn't fulfill, and if he couldn't fulfill it, then the king was going to come in and beat up Israel. So the king was upset. He tore his clothes and said, "I can't believe there's nothing I can do. We're ruined." The prophet Elisha hears about this. He steps on the scene. He sees that the king is upset and tormented. And Elisha sees that the king is anxious about this situation, and he offers to help. Elisha sees this as an opportunity to demonstrate the power of God, to prove that there is indeed a prophet in Israel. So in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse number 8, it says, "When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message: 'Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a message to say to him, 'Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed.'" It's kind of a strange direction. He literally said, "Go jump in the lake." No wonder drugs, no herbal treatments. Nope, just go wash in the Jordan 7 times and you'll be healed. Naaman wasn't having it though, church. Verse number 11, chapter 5, "But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar the rivers of Damascus river than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went off in a rage. just speak over me, Elisha, O prophet of God, and I'll be healed. Just wave your hands. Don't you have? I mean, give me a drink of some holy water or something. I mean, watch, jump in the muddy Jordan River. How am I going to clean myself in a dirty river? I mean, at least send me to a clean water source. Some of the waters in the capital city of Damascus, them waters, yeah. The clear blue water, not the dirty brown river water. Naaman was upset. And you know what? I get it. I'm with you, Naaman. I get it. You're already rough, right? Why do you have to go through more rough stuff? And that's the story of so many who are on their journey, so many who are under construction, rough stuff. I wish I could tell everyone in here that once you decide to follow Jesus, last week we sang a song, I have decided to follow Jesus. And many of us have made that decision. I wish that I could tell every one of you that once you make a decision to follow Jesus, smooth sailing, no more rough stuff. When you get sick, it will just get better. When you have kids, they will always do the right things. When you get married, you will never have a disagreement. When you take over that ministry, you will never have any challenges. That's just not the case. When we say yes to Jesus, we say yes to potential heartaches, disappointments, setbacks, challenges, and going through some rough stuff. And the way out of those heartaches and disappointments and challenges may call for some more rough renovations. It's like that rough road. In order to smooth that road out, it will mean making that road rough. It means construction workers and jackhammers and bobcats crushing the pavement. And before it gets better, it's gonna get rough. For Naaman, it meant taking advice from a lowly servant girl and traveling to an inferior people, to an inferior land. Like, you want me to dip in waters in Israel? Ugh. Send me back to my homeland where it's beautiful, where the waters are blue and the springs are fresh. Send me. He was receiving advice from a captured servant girl going to an inferior land. For Naaman, it meant going for a dip in a muddy river to be cleansed from his leprosy. It meant listening to other servants to convince him to go and do what he was told. Naaman was used to giving the orders, not taking orders. For those of us who are under construction, it might mean being broken. Broken up and ripped up, only to be put back together all over again. I don't know exactly why some of us get cancer or some of us lose important people in our lives. I don't know exactly why some of us experience gut-wrenching heartache and disappointment. I don't know why some of us get jobs that we are never happy with. I don't know why some of us get addicted to substances. I don't know why some of us go through the stuff that we go through. I do know that people of faith are not exempt from the roughness of life. And I also know that people of faith are often broken down. as an opportunity for God to build character and to build lives up. Paul, who knew a little bit about being a rough road, being rough pavement himself, he wrote this to the Roman church. He says, we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. Seeing roughness in our lives isn't necessarily a way of seeing that we're useless or no, it's a way of seeing that God is doing something. God might be taking us through a construction project. Brother James would add, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Do you see that the rough stuff is a way of building you up and maturing you and growing you and shaping you and refinishing you? I know he's not in here right now, but let me speak a word of blessing for our brother, Gray Gaines. This brother has been diagnosed with cancer and has to go through treatments that just simply wipe him out. Some of you have gone with him on his treatments, and those of you who know him and see him after he receives a treatment know that he's wiped out. And church, it's enough to make you want to just throw the towel in. But Greg has not let this rough road in his life deter him from walking a journey in faith with God. Now, this brother is up here at the building day after day working to help transform the lives of little children. He's praying, he's dreaming, he's planning, he's writing, he's inspiring, and he's following the call on his life from God to work in the kingdom. Rough roads are not a signal to quit. It's a signal that we are under construction. And if we are still under construction, then we are still useful for something. We don't fix things that are not useful. We don't fix things that we're going to end up just throwing away. We fix things that are going to be used that are still good. It's the reason we can't give up on people. I know there's some people in our lives that are really rough, and we would just rather just get them out of our lives. Get them away from us. But I'm here to tell you that those people are under construction. They're still useful. God is still doing something with them. I guarantee there are people like Troy Evans, who we would just rather give up on. They're just too rough for any good. You see, about Troy Evans, they would say, man, he's a gang leader. He's probably done hurt some folks. He's a drug pusher. He's too rough. Let's just give up on him. Then God says, not so fast. You see, Troy is under construction. Let's watch.
Troy Evans grew up in the inner city streets of Grand Rapids, Michigan. When he was 9 years old, he faced one of the darkest days of his life.
One of the neighbors, he was taking the kids and, you know, doing, you know, playing horse, I guess, and putting everybody on the shoulders and walking around the corner or whatever. And then I would, and shortly after, he would bring them back. And it was my turn, and got on the shoulders, and next thing I know, I ended up in an abandoned garage, and that's where I was molested.
That day changed his life forever.
Anger. Confusion. I started to display my anger, my frustration, my confusion about who I was.
Troy battled his anger in the only way he knew.
Fighting. You know, as a kid, I wasn't your normal 10, 11-year-old.
And as a teen, he turned to alcohol to deaden the pain. Troy eventually found acceptance in a gang.
Well, you don't need to change who you are. Don't pull up your pants. Don't take off your hat. Don't do any of those things. Just come as you are. And, but it seemed like everywhere else I went, from school to church to everywhere else, they wanted to change the only thing I was good at, and that was being me. And this place, they didn't want to change it. It's like, no, you're okay. There's something wrong with them.
Life with the gangs was filled with more than just violence.
It moved on to the drug scene. Then it moved to the prostitution. And then it got more violent, where people got hurt. And so we would go and started to sell crack cocaine. We'd do it on the street corner, end up eventually getting houses, and eventually taking over blocks. And after that, it just spread.
Troy became a leader of his gang.
Then after I became an officer in the organization, then I was given my own space. And that's when I went over to, quite frankly, just take over my mother's neighborhood and set up shop and recruited some guys. And grew very quickly from about 10, 15 guys to, you know, sometimes 50, 60 people.
But the years of violence took their toll.
It was every single day. It was like warfare. Quite frankly, I got tired of it. It was just a matter of time. Either I was going to be a prisoner or I was going to be dead.
Troy wanted to start over, and he left Grand Rapids and moved to Detroit. There, he met a girl named LaDawn at a bar, and they moved in together. But LaDawn decided to clean up her life and go back to the faith she knew as a little girl.
There was something about me that I knew I was away from God, and my actions were showing that.
So to convince me to go to church was a miracle. And so she got me to go. And the guy, Jesse Duplantis, was preaching. He said a statement, it's not enough for you to sit here and say that you're a man, but it's time for you to stand up and be God's man. And that day, I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ.
Troy remembers his prayer that day.
He said, if you can take this desire to drink my life away, to take away the pain, to take away the hurts, if you can take this away from me, I will serve you.
LaDawn rededicated her life to Christ, and she and Troy were married. Troy was excited about his new life, but all he really knew was how to survive on the streets.
Once I accepted the Lord, I was trying to figure out, like, how can I use all those things for his glory? You know, I wasn't educated. I didn't have any of that, but I had my street cred. I had my ability to hustle. I had my ability to recruit people. I had my ability. I still had that stuff. And it's like, well, how can that be used for his glory?
Men at his church mentored Troy. They taught him about God and trained him in business and computer technology. Troy excelled and became Microsoft certified and worked with several major companies. Ultimately, he became an ordained minister, and in 2009, he started a church in his hometown of Grand Rapids to reach out to those in the inner city.
I think he wants to see broken people restored and to see that there is hope, that we don't have to live a hopeless life. I think that's huge for him, because for a lot of his life he felt hopeless.
Now he and his family live and are welcomed in the area where he was once feared.
There's a lot of Troy Evans out here with much greater stories and all that stuff. But man, it's still pretty sweet to know that God can and he will redeem anything and anybody.
Yeah, God will redeem anything and anybody. So not so fast. Stop giving up on these rough roads, right? Because God has people under construction. We don't know people's story. It's one of the things that we have to be very, very, very important about when we're ready to pass judgment on somebody. Before we pass judgment on somebody, we have to find out what their story is. We don't know people's story. And I think that when we begin to learn people's story and we begin to have a better perspective that man, this is not a rough road ready to just throw it. No, this is a rough road that God can enter into, transform, renovate, make better. You see, Naaman was a rough road, but he obeyed. He dipped in the Jordan and was healed. Text verse 14, chapter 5 says, so he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Beautiful story. Doesn't end there. Again, I encourage you to go and read all of chapter 5 and read the rest of that story. And what's important in the story of Naaman, which is also important in our own stories, our own lives, is that God sends, when you're under construction, God sends construction workers in your life. Think about it. Think about the people in your life that you know you're not who you are, except that they were in your life as God's construction workers. For Naaman, it was that servant girl, and it was the servants that after he went away angry and said, I'm not dipping in that water, his servants like, listen, you need to listen to the man of God. You need to go do what he said. Construction workers, you know, we need to have respect for construction workers, right? We need to take care of God's construction workers. That's taking care of each other. Because I suspect that in the lives of a lot of rough people in the world, you are their construction worker. While we are under construction, don't misconstrue rough pavement as rejection. I have a friend, Steve, who I'm in seminary with. He was a student with me in my first semester. Steve and I and seven others were in a covenant group together. And in this covenant group together as students, some of us were full-time ministers, some weren't. Steve had spent 31 years in the Marines and had served in Desert Storm. And before going over to Desert Storm, he started preaching, but then he walked away, but he felt the call again to go back into ministry. And I remember in Covenant Group where we were able to share whatever we needed to share in that group without fear of being rejected or fear of you know, being, you know, mistreated because of the things that we say. We also, though, invited, when we shared something in group and we had a whole covenant that we wrote out, if we shared something, we were open for others to speak into our lives. So if I shared something, I invited people to challenge me and to say things and to speak into my life. And I remember Steve almost weekly looked at obstacles in his life as signs that this wasn't what God was calling him to do. And so he would come to class and he would ask, he said, oh, we moved here from North Carolina and you know, I'm in school here and, you know, but the house in North Carolina, we need the house in North Carolina to sell and it was on the market and we had buyers and then the sale, it didn't go through and so now we're stuck with this house and I wonder if this is God saying this isn't what you were called to do. And it was just a story week after week. It was that story, it was that story, it was that story, it was that story. Then towards the end of the semester, I remember we had this opportunity where we went in a circle and we could just sort of just say something about each person in our group. And I remember when I got to Steve, and I won't tell you everything I said, but I'll say this. I said, Steve, when you get these cues in your life that you read as bad news, that doesn't mean that God isn't still calling you to do ministry. I think those are opportunities that God is using to shape you and to build you. He texted me later on and shared some things with me and came back next week to the class and opened up about some experiences he had during Desert Storm that he had never shared before. And he broke down. And what he realized is that all these things that he had been experiencing that he thought were closed doors, or that it was helping him get to this moment where he can share some of these things that he had never shared before, that would help him be a better pastor, be a better minister, be a better husband, be a better dad, be a better brother. That even the horrors that he went through during Desert Storm, having to write home to the parents of some of the guys under his command, writing letters saying, "I'm sorry, but your son was killed." That those instances now help him to be one of the most compassionate people that you would ever, ever meet. I don't know why God allows beautiful people to get cancer. I don't know why God allows us to go through some of this rough stuff. I do know, and I've witnessed people go through rough stuff, and it shapes them into the most incredible people that I have ever met. I don't even mind talking about my brother Andy right here. My brother Andy was born without arms like you and I. But you talk about someone who praises God stronger than I have ever met in my entire life. It's Andy. It's Andy who on the phone sometimes weeps because he's in the hospital. And he's like, "Brother, I just want to be at church. I just want to give praise to God." How many times have you and I just said, "I don't feel like going to church today. I just don't feel like getting out of bed." But here's a brother who weeps and longs to be here. Doesn't allow his rough road to be a deterrent to his faith. But his rough road has informed his faith and shaped him. So church, we're under construction. And some of us are going through some rough stuff. Some of us have experienced some rough stuff. I'm praying that you allow that rough stuff to shape you. And understand that it's God molding you and breaking you and shaping you and forming you. And just like he has told his people over and over and over again, just be still. Just be still. As a church, just be still. As Israel is running from the Egyptians and they get to the Red Sea and they see them closing in, "Oh no, we're gonna die, we're gonna die. Oh no, they're gonna get us." Moses says, "Just be still." And then God opens the Red Sea and they get through, and then it closes back over and the Egyptians drown. Just be still. When it gets rough and tough in your life, just be still. God is doing something. You're under construction. It's my prayer that you would continue to submit yourself to God's way, the way Naaman did. Reluctant, but we're all reluctant. A little stubborn, but we're all stubborn. Don't want to go through the stuff that, you know, just doesn't make sense. We all feel that way. It's my prayer that you would submit, make a decision to follow Jesus, follow God, and just be still. Let him work on you. Let him break you. Let him mold you. Let him shape you. It will build you up. It will make you a better person. So we sing this song of invitation. If we as a church can be helpful to you while you're under construction, we want to walk alongside you. We want to share stories with you. We want to hear stories. We want to walk hand in hand with you as you're under construction. You want to enter into a life with God through faith and baptism, confession, repentance. You want to be fully on board with God's construction project in your life. We want to offer that to you. Let's stand. Let's sing this song together.